like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is John Lucas, president of the Okapi Conservation Project, which, working in the Democratic Republic of Congo, or DRC, aims its efforts towards protecting the Okapi, a fascinating animal that is indigenous to the DRC, is the country's national symbol, and whose population has plummeted in recent years, with the animal being reclassified as endangered. We'll learn a bit about the Okapi, the reasons for its increasingly dire plight, and more when we speak with John Lucas in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Later in today's show, we'll have a brief conversation with Kelly Sippos, Executive Director of Saddle Up Riding Club, an equestrian therapy program for disabled children and adults held in Pinellas Park that is in a sort of struggle to raise enough money or relocate to ensure its survival. More on this later. Also, towards the end of today's show, a Name That Animal tune will be offering as the prize a pair of tickets to see Garrison Keillor appearing January 12th at the Straz Center. And also later, we'll hear a reading of the Dorothy Strauss Christmas message. If you want to know what that is, stay tuned, as they say. Right now, though, let's hear an animal song. This is a little band called the Beatles with Blackbird on Talking Animals. Well.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night, take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night, take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You are only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly into the line of a dark black night. Black night. Blackbird singing in the dead of night, take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise.
That was the Beatles, promising outfit. With Blackbird, an animal song to get us started. All right, let's speak with John Lucas about the Okapi Conservation Project, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome John Lucas to Talk Animals. Good morning, John.
Hey, good morning, Duncan. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thanks so much for joining us today on Talking Animals. And gosh, to me, there are so many important things for us to discuss today, so many dimensions, really, to the Okapi story at the moment. But I don't think we can really get into those things very effectively until we kind of really address the Okapi itself. I mean, they're truly fascinating animals. I became interested in them as a kid. I remember doing a report even in elementary school. I mean, at that point, I was probably fascinated by slightly the wrong things, but still I was fascinated by them. So let's really find out a little bit about them. I mean, I could read from that report that I wrote when I was 10 or 11, or you could tell us probably much more effectively about the animal.
Yeah, the Okapi is really a forest giraffe. There's only two species in the giraffe family, the Savannah giraffe that we're used to seeing with the very long necks, and the Okapi is a forest form. The food sources are much closer to the ground, so it's no need for really long neck, but they're basically very similar. They've been separated for a long period of time, evolutionary, but they're in the same family. The Okapi, I think, gets the imagination like you do when you're a child, because they were the last large animal discovered in Africa in 1901. It was a very mysterious animal, and it still is, very secretive. So when the first signs that came out in the early 1900, they're very fascinated by him, and there was a big rush to bring the specimens into museums and into zoos, because they were just thought to be such a unique animal with the stripes like a zebra and different head and the coloration. And they're quite large. The females are 800-plus pounds, and the males around 600, so a very big animal, size of a small horse.
And so when you say secretive, what do you mean by that?
Well, basically, they live in a very dense understory of tropical forest and a certain belt across the DRC, Democratic Republic of the Congo, which was Zaire, which was the Belgian Congo.
Mm-hmm.
And they browse on about 100 different species of leaves. They don't use trails, so they just kind of walk through this forest eating. And basically, they have a tremendous sense of hearing and smell. So before someone even gets close to them, they are long gone. They're solitary, first of all, except for a mother and a calf, and they will just be on alert all the time. Leopards are their main predator, so they're always on the alert for strange sounds or noises that, you know, a predator may make, so they just kind of move off, and they're very quiet. They move very quietly through the forest.
Well, they sound more and more interesting by the moment, and I guess another thing that's notable about them is their tongue. Maybe we could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, giraffes and Okapi have about an 18-inch long tongue, and what's pretty unique about the Okapi is they can reach every bit of their body with their tongue to clean themselves. They can turn and twist, so they groom themselves on a regular basis. They stay very clean. They have a very beautiful dark brown, almost black coat. It's like velvet, and they constantly keep themselves in good condition, and it's mainly to help with insect repellents and things like that for insects getting on them.
So with that tongue and with that sort of flexibility, in other words, they it sounds like you're sort of painting a picture of them grooming themselves, not unlike a house cat you would see in the living room.
Right, they can reach their ears. Maybe they take the tongue, they flick it all over the place. But the tongue's real purpose is to wrap around a bunch of leaves and pull it off the stem into their mouth. And so this way, they can actually they wrap around several times, get a good grip, and they jerk. A very quick jerk of the head, and they tear all the leaves off, and then they swallow them, and they're ruminant, so they would chew their cud later on to help digest the nutrients in the food.
Really interesting. And another thing that is interesting, of course, I've been studying up a little bit in preparation for our conversation and wanting to update my fourth grade report a little bit. It's interesting to me, but ultimately, I guess it makes sense that the markings, you know, the stripes, anybody who's seen a picture, I've certainly posted a few on Facebook the last few days, but just generally anyone who's seen them or seen a picture of them, yeah, they have that sort of zebra-like stripes, pattern on the legs. And yet, from what I've read, and you can speak to this better, obviously, I mean, that is actually seen as a way to help camouflage them better, when I would have initially thought almost the reverse would be true.
Yeah, I've seen it actually happen, and when the light dapples to the forest floor, very little light hits the forest floor, so it comes in as dappling streaks, and the stripes on the rump just kind of help break up the Okapi outline, for they kind of blend in with the environment.
Yeah,
and this would freeze them, but there, you know, a lot of animals have rump patterns for following for their calves. And, you know, the calf doesn't really follow its mother till it's about 4 or 5 months old, but still, it could be a following mechanism. There's, you know, normally the mother's getting this very dense understory, but they do use infrasound, so they're communicating, so I don't think that's really an effective reason for it. I think the camouflage purpose has to be there because they wouldn't have unless it worked.
Yeah, so interesting. And since you've mentioned the mother and calf a couple times, but that they're otherwise solitary animals, at what point does a calf kind of split off from its mother?
Usually around a year. They have a very unusual biology in that their biology has evolved to avoid leopard predation, and so the calf, after it's born, gets takes a spot or a nest, and it stays in this nest and just gets up 2 or 3, maybe 4 times a day to nurse and goes right back to it. And the mother uses infrasound, sound below our hearing, below the leopard's hearing, to communicate this. And the mother does not want to bring attention to their offspring. So she is, you know, out eating, and she has to eat a lot of leaves to produce the milk, a very high-fat milk, because the calf grows very fast. Usually large animals grow slow, but an okapi is almost full size at 10 months.
Wow.
On their own, they're on by a year. And this is just to get up. When they start following their mother, they're almost 3/4 grown, and they're big enough usually to rub a leopard off if it jumps on their back. So it's just a very unusual strategy to avoid bumping into a leopard while they're patrolling the forest for their own food.
And are leopards the only predators to speak of, at least animal predators?
Yeah, historically, today, of course, man is the major predator.
Yeah.
But there are Mbuti pygmies, small forest people that live in this area, and we work with them, and they have a taboo against killing okapi and chimpanzees because they feel they may be, they are the ancestral spirit. So that's one thing. But other areas besides where we work, the animal is poached for its meat, so it is snared, and mainly by snaring is how they're caught. And I think that's been in certain areas always going on. But because they don't use trails, they're really hard to, you know, zero in where they're going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they sound, I mean, a word that does pop up a lot is elusive, and as you even just briefly described, kind of how they operate and how they travel and that sort of sense of hearing and way of communicating. It seems like it'd be very hard even for the most astute leopard to maybe zero in very successfully. So,
and that's the real issue we have with is censusing their numbers. How do you know how many okapi there are? Because they are so secretive. We do a lot of transects, and we work with a fecal collection. We have, you know, there's fecal DNA you can extract to make sure you have an okapi sample. So many of the population studies are done through a censusing transect method. But unfortunately, because of all the armed conflict, it's even almost impossible to get into these areas now to even do basic censusing. So, and that's why the okapi has just been reclassified as endangered, because we just have a feeling in going across the range that the animal populations are declining just based on incidental observation.
No, and I definitely want to cover that in a little more detail. Let me just let folks know this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, my guest is John Lucas, president of the Okapi Conservation Project. If you'd like to ask John a question about okapis or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. So, if I'm not mistaken, John, okapis are only found in the Democratic Republic of Congo, or DRC. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Were they ever found anywhere else, or has it always been specific to that region?
Well, they did. They were found in, there's a forest on the eastern border with Uganda, the Selmuki Forest, and the okapi were found there.
Mm-hmm.
They're no longer found there, so that's why the range is restricted. But they did at one time occur into the common forest boundary with Uganda into the Congo. So that's the range. They don't. It's about 250,000 square kilometers, a suitable range. And they do live in fairly high density. They have very small territory because the food is quite readily available to them in the forest.
Okay, so they don't have to forage too far, it sounds like, I guess.
No.
And you know, earlier this year on the show, I spoke with Claudine Andre about the bonobo, of course, which is also only found in the DRC. It's just kind of interesting to me that a very specific kind of area like that, there's at least these two, maybe others even that I'm not aware of, that are specific only to the DRC.
Yeah, there's about 30% of the animals found in the Congo are endemic, which means only found there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's mainly about geography. The Congo River it splits off a lot and the environment changes. And the main thing is the forest has always really been in the Congo through these different climatic changes and ice ages. Other parts of Africa got drier and no trees, but just the core area of the Congo always remained forest. So this is a refugia for certain species like okapi and bonobos that have been around a long time. The okapi is a really old mammal, has been around a long time.
Yeah.
So they weren't stressed. If the forest gone, they'd be gone. So they were allowed in. Bonobos the same way. There are the normal chimpanzees. The Congo River is a geographic barrier. The south of it is where the bonobos are found. North of it is where the what they call common chimpanzee, but they're not common. It's the chimpanzee we know.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a good number of them in the Okapi Wildlife Reserve, and they share the habitat with okapi and forest elephants. And that's the species. The forest elephant is now determined to be a separate species of elephants.
And yeah.
That's found. So there's that. That's unique. And there's lots of small things like swimming genets, and you know, lots of different animals that do weird things in the forest.
All right. Well, as they should, I guess. But
so
now you've touched on the sort of just the very reduced numbers near as you can tabulate, and I do want to come back to that since they were recently classified as endangered. But it kind of feels more fitting first that we learn a little bit more about the Okapi Conservation Project. I mean, tell us a little bit about your organization, starting with when and why, really, it was launched initially.
We started the project in 1987, myself, a Swiss gentleman, and a Congolese partner. We all worked together to work with the government at the time, Zaire, to start the okapi project because there was no protected area for okapi, and mm-hmm. there was such an unusual animal, and I was fascinated by him. And we were able to make an arrangement with the government to set up the project in Apulu, which was the site of the old Belgian capture station where all the okapi in captivity come from out of this area. And we helped over in 1992, the Okapi Wildlife Reserve was created. In 1996, it became a World Heritage Site. And basically, we wanted to have an area where the okapi would be protected in perpetuity. And the reserve is quite large, and so it's about 1.5 times the size of Yellowstone National Park, and it has a tremendous population of wildlife.
Wow.
Because of the reserve, it's shared with about 40,000 people in and around, so we have a strong community project to engage the communities to live sustainably on the resources and to help protect the wildlife, and that's a very big thing we do. But the most important thing we do is we fund the protection of the area. The Institute in the Congo for the Conservation of Nature, or ICCN, that's the government agency responsible for protection of wildlife and protected areas. And the country is very poor, as you know, and so we fund all the guards' salaries, health care, patrol rations, equipment, everything, where they can be out in the field, protecting the area from illegal activities and protecting the wildlife.
Wow, well, that sounds like a large mandate, given what we've already heard about sort of what the challenges facing the okapi. How many people work for the Okapi Conservation Project, and how many volunteer for it?
Well, right now we fund all the ICCN, which is about 130 guards and administrators.
Mm-hmm.
Our project has about 37 employees. We have educators, agronomes for our agroforestry. And we provide all the infrastructure support for ICCN. We have mechanics and carpenters and logistical people that help bring all the supplies in and help organize all the patrols and different activities that the rangers are involved in.
So I would presume at least that the vast bulk of these folks that are employed in one capacity or another are based in the Democratic Republic of
Congo. Yeah, they're all Congolese. We are
right.
All Congolese. We have one Swiss woman, the wife of the person I started the project with, who was unfortunately killed in the war eight years ago.
Wow.
So Rosie Roof is still there, and she's been in the Congo for about 30 years now. And so she's our point person for logistics, and then we have a tremendous Congolese staff that have been with us for 20 years and really do a great job.
And then how is it, John, that you're based in, if I'm not mistaken, Jacksonville, Florida?
Well, I go back and forth. I've been involved. I'm involved different kind. I helped start the project, and I spent a lot of time there in the early days, but I go back 2 or 3 times a year. And the real reason right now is very dangerous for me over there. I kind of stand out. And so it's,
I mean, just because you've been such a prominent figure for so many years, or?
Yeah, and we support, there's the people, the rebel groups are trying to, just disrupt the government's ability to protect the wildlife. So we fund that protection. That's known, so that they target, they've killed rangers, they've killed soldiers. Mm. These people are very dangerous in this area. So I'm going over in January, so I'll be there in January. But it's very risky for anybody over there now. It's getting better. I'm a little hopeful. The most recent events are positive. With the fall of the M23, one of the major rebel groups was just defeated. So I think we're on the way up, but it's still a very tenuous situation.
So when you go over there this next time in January, I mean, what sort of precautions do you take, and how much danger do you feel like you're in when you are over there on those visits?
Well, you know, we don't really make a big deal. We have to drive about 400 miles to get to our site. Mm. Once we're at a site, we're fairly protected. The guards are there, and there's an army unit based in our center in the middle of the reserve. But the roads are, it's just the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah.
That's the situation. You got to be careful. We got a lot of our staff is, you know, very connected with the communities, and we kind of know what's helpfully can get the jungle telegraph going, so we know what's going on.
But I see.
We have to be careful, and but it's important to be there on site for, you know, we have to do our work plans and our budget planning and
sure.
set our priorities for the year. I usually go over 3 or 4 times a year for a month at a time.
I got you.
This is a nonprofit. The U.S. side is just a few volunteers. We do everything on the fundraising side, websites here in the States, mainly to get the funds over to the Congo. I just want to mention that, you know, you have Lowry Park there in Tampa.
Yeah.
And they're they have Okapi, and they're big supporters. We get a lot of supporters from zoos. They're very progressive in supporting international conservation efforts. So just make it, you know, Lowry Park is one of them, and most of the zoos that have Okapi are very supportive of protecting the wild Okapi.
Well, you know, I was going to get into this later, but this is actually, now that you bring up Lowry Park, is probably as good a time as any. I guess I can't help wondering with what you described earlier about the Okapis being so shy and elusive and secretive, I think even was one of the words you used, in the wild. I wonder how they fare in captivity.
Well, it's very unusual. It's not just Okapi. Most of your forest animals, bongo antelope and other ones, once something has been processed by their senses, they accept it. So if you're in front of Okapi, and Okapi, you know, things are around, they're perfectly fine with it. It's the things they don't see and the things that they hear far off that are more troublesome to them. So it's really amazing that, we, you know, wild Okapi that were brought into captivity, you know, within a couple of days, you could be touching them. They just, once they accept your environment is safe, they're not worried about that anymore. They're worried about something, you know, a quarter mile away in the forest that could be troublesome. So they just have this way. The only thing you have to worry about is a sudden type of loud noise, a car backfiring or something like that.
Okay.
That's the thing that would startle them. But basically, they're amazingly calm in captivity. It's just a total reversal. In the wild, you never would see one because they'd be gone.
Right.
But once you're no longer a threat and you're not going to harm them, they say, well, that's okay. You're just like a tree. You're not going to bother me. So I'll worry about what's behind the next tree. So
wow. So they really become habituated and then just hang out.
They're quite easy to manage. And we're also very fortunate that the diet we provide Okapi in zoos is very well tolerated. It does well. They live well into their 30s in captivity. They produce offspring. So, you know, we're very fortunate. A lot of browsing, if you can, the Okapi fare quite well.
Yeah.
It's good. And so they have they live a long life. They're very good alfalfa hay and good grain and lots of fruits and vegetables and leaves whenever you can. The Okapi fare quite well.
Yeah.
It's good. And so they have they live a long life. They're very productive. And, you know, if you go to a zoo, you know, you can watch an Okapi. It does not get nervous about the people. It just kind of says, you know, this is just like a bunch of monkeys in a tree. I'm not worried about it. You know?
Yeah, interesting. And so if they live to their 30s in captivity, how does that compare with what their life expectancy is in the wild?
Well, I would say, you know, they get into their 20s, and, you know, I've seen some older animals that we've treated that were very old, and mm-hmm. by their teeth, they were well into their 20s. So, you know, they have small home ranges. They know their territory very well.
Yeah.
They know how to avoid things. And once they're full size, the leopards have a hard time with them. And so we've seen animals that have leopard scars on their back where a leopard had got them, but they rubbed them off. So they run into the wrong type of human activity, they can live, you know, a fairly good long lifetime for an animal. Giraffes do live in their 30s also, so they're a very long-lived animal species.
Yeah. Well, with that in mind, let's look more carefully at the numbers, and maybe we should sort of travel in reverse in a sense. Tell us, as in the latter part of this year, you know, what the approximate, you already made it clear that it's hard to really pinpoint the population, but what the approximate population of okapi in the wild looks like, and then maybe chart that number relative to the population, say, 5 years ago, and then maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah, you know, the data we have, basically, we go back to the mid-1995, 1996. We had some decent data, and the estimates then were probably between 30 and 40,000 okapi,
mm-hmm.
which is a pretty good population.
Yeah.
It's the data that we have, just incidentally, through our censusing and plus the reports, mainly from the guards patrolling, because they would have an incident record of an okapi sign or a sighting,
mm-hmm.
patrol. And what the endangered status is, the population has declined, you know, over 50%. And what the IUCN looks for is over three generations, which is about 24 years for okapi.
Okay.
So over 25 years, let's say, they've declined the population in half.
Hmm.
And so we don't know exactly how many numbers there are now. And that's really, but it's definitely been cut in half or more. So, you know,
wow.
you're looking at 10 to 15, you know, maybe 20,000 okapi. But it's definitely, but the other side of the equation is the trends causing the decline are still there. And that's the pressing concern. It's not like we've stopped why they're going down.
Right. Well, let's talk about that. What are the main causes? We've touched on one or two along the way here, but what are the main causes of their declining population?
So I just, you know, going back, we were there in the late 80s, early 90s,
mm-hmm.
there was no decline in the okapi population. It was increasing. We had good sensing. So there was no threats. The main threat today is the armed groups that are prevalent in this region.
Mm.
And the main way two ways they affect wildlife populations. First, they prevent effective conservation action. They stop the guards from going on the patrol. It's too dangerous for the guards. This forest, you get ambushed. You have no chance in an ambush in the forest. So that's really limits what the guards can do without good intelligence where the groups are. And the second thing, these armed militias, which are a bunch of thugs, and they engage in illegal activities from gold mining, elephant poaching, bushmeat, logging. So they involve a lot of illegal activities. So that kind of, okapi are very sensitive to disturbance in the environment, so there's a lot of activity that are going to leave the area. And so they may end up in an area that's not suitable for them. So that's one of the two big issues.
Yeah.
And our program, we go after, we help the rangers help protect in the Army, but mainly working with the people for they're not destroying okapi habitat. So we have programs around sustainable agriculture and everything that works around food security and health care and education so the people do not have to cut a lot of trees or, you know, to make a living, and that leaves okapi habitat intact and for other species also. So that's our approach on that side. But
I see.
We're working with the government, and the government has to, and this is something the government has to do and the Army has to. We really can't stop armed militias. That's what they have to do.
Okay, so you mentioned earlier that there's a certain amount of poaching. Why are okapi poached? I mean, what is it? For bushmeat?
Yeah, well, basically they're poached, and I'm almost saying incidentally, poaching for bushmeat has two routes. They're, first of all, the people in the markets, and they make money off it. But secondly, when you have these illegal gold mines, the miners live off of bushmeat. And the okapi, there's large animals in the forest. There's forest buffalo, there's bongo antelope, there's these large yellow-backed duikers. So the traps are set for big animals, and so the okapi will be caught, in, you know, very rarely, but incidentally, in these, and it's definitely bushmeat. We've had a couple of skins come out, but there's no real market. All the use of the okapis internally is not, there's no international market trade in okapi, so it's just incidentally. And certain areas where the bushmeat activities are higher, I think that hits the okapi hard, but in areas where it's minimal, I think the okapi do fine, because they are big and strong, so if it's set for a smaller animal, they can get out of it. And,
yeah.
You know, we've treated animals with snare wounds on their legs, you know, where metal snares, we had to cut them out. But, you know, basically, it's just the disruption of the control of the rangers protecting the environment allows it. So our programs are anti-poaching. And the main driver behind the poaching, the bushmeat is there, but the main driver is elephant poaching for ivory. That's the main driver for people. And they don't really affect okapi, but they disrupt the environment with their activities.
So the peripheral mm-hmm. aspects
yeah.
of that. Wow.
And plus they got to, you know, they eat too. So the main thing is moving, you know, and we've had a good communication. The governor of the province is a great supporter of the reserve and our project. And President Kabila was just there 3 weeks ago at our station, promising to do more to rid this area. So we really feel confident the government's finally, and the UN has finally turned their attention to, we're in Oriental province, which is right next to Kivu, where all the problems that you've been reading about in the newspapers and on TV.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wanted to ask a little bit more about it. Let me just quickly say this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is John Lucas, president of the Okapi Conservation Project. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. So, yes, John, can you sort of place the military action and conflict, you know, that we are reading about and hearing about in context for us? I mean, just it sounds like there was some sort of major clash just a couple of days ago where I think 22 or thereabouts people died. I mean,
the root of all this goes back to the civil war that overthrew Mobutu from 97 to 2003. And what happened after that war, when there was never really a reinstitution of civil order and proper governance. So it's been like a Wild West since then. But more recently, because of the flow of arms, mainly from Sudan and from Uganda, Rwanda, into the Congo, there's a lot of armed groups, and there was no effective force. The Congolese army was very weak. What's turned this really around is the UN has put in a special force made up of African countries, Tanzania, Malawi, a third country, and they have the mandate to be aggressive to disarm. The other UN forces were not allowed to engage unless fired upon. So the whole scene has shifted. These are the group that just defeated the M23, which was the most organized and major disruptive force in the Kivu province in Goma area. Mm. So they're in Uganda in prison now. They left. They fled the border. And now they're turning towards these other groups. The incident you just talked about, there's a group in the Congo that are actually Ugandan rebels living in the Congo, and that's the real worst kind because they don't have any relationship with the people.
Yeah.
And so that's a group that just terrorized and killed these people near Beni, which is a very bad thing. But they're next on the list, and I think, you know, there's been a mandate they have to disarm or they will be disarmed. So I'm hopeful Kabila is actually fine. President Kabila is really paying attention because he knows this is a situation that has to be solved, and they have the resources. For the main fact that the UN spends $3 million a day in the Congo. It's a huge amount of money. They spend $3 million a day.
Wow.
There needs to be more effective results for spending $3 million a day.
Holy cow. That's a staggering sum, really.
Staggering number, and you should see the infrastructure. There's UN bases and helicopters and stuff, but they're not that effective. So this new group of African troops is very effective, and we're very glad that they're on the scene now.
Well, John, we're sort of just in the last moment or two of our time, but let me at least get to one or two of our emails that have come in. One says, the subject line says, "Great guest," with an exclamation point. Says, "Okapis are amazing." By the way, is it Okapis singular and plural?
Yeah, people say Okapi or Okapis. You can say either way.
Okay, I've noticed that you seem to be using just the one word, both singular and plural.
Yeah, I just use Okapi for if single and plural, but some people say it's kind of, when you spell it, it's kind of funny to spell it. That's why I said,
well, okay, Okapi. Yeah, all right. Well, I just wanted to double check.
Just for your general knowledge, for your fourth grade report,
yeah.
Okapi comes from the Mbuti Pygmy word Oapi. Oapi is how what they call them. So Okapi is just based on how the pygmies called them.
Oh, okay, cool. All right, now back to our emailer. So Okapi are amazing. I hear they have quite an oily coat. Is that true? And also, do you think they are oily to keep bugs away?
Yeah, they have if you rub them, you get a real sticky, dark brown substance on your hand. It's very sticky. And actually, Gaur, the big wild cattle from India, have the same thing. And I feel, and I don't think it's much time, that when insects land on them, this kind of gums up the insect's feet. You know, they just really can't move around. So it's kind of a natural insect. I don't think it repels them. It doesn't really have an odor, but it has such a sticky substance that it's almost like a fly trap. It gets stuck there, you know, so
oh,
they can't
wow.
really, you know, move around.
Interesting. All right, let's try to take one quick call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with John Lucas.
If you don't.
All right. Well, maybe I think they might have been on a cell or a little bit of a problem there. Let me just ask. I think you already sort of touched on this a moment ago, but just as we wrap up here, John, I mean, as you look out a few years, you know, what's your view? It sounds like you're fairly optimistic.
Yeah, well, we had an attack on our station in June of 2012, and they burned the ICCN headquarters to the ground. We are actually just finished rebuilding that. We rebuilt our facilities. I think that the government paying attention to our area, the governor of the province, it's the largest province in the Congo. He grew up next to the reserve. He is very supportive. He is trying to mobilize the army to be more beneficial. So I'm positive that way. In our looking out a few years, we need to, you know, get the protection going, and we have some other partners coming in, because this is it's an expensive place to work, because your logistics and transport and everything just costs so much money, and the roads are horrendous.
Sure.
So we have, you know, we have to raise the money, and we have bring in partners. The Wildlife Conservation Society from New York is one of our partners. We have a German aid agency in there to help as part of the project. So we just have to have more people. It is a World Heritage Site. It's one of the most, you know, it is, believe it or not, the best protected site in all the Congo. What's left is phenomenal diversity in the Congo, but unfortunately, this breakdown society has pervaded every bit of the country, unfortunately. So now we're slowly coming back, and I think, you know, getting economic development into the area is going to be the most important thing, because our real issue is the young people not having enough to do, getting involved in illegal activities. We have to find alternative ways for them to make a living.
All right. Well, sounds like significant challenges, but also like you have more than a little optimism about what the future is.
And what I know, copy are secretive, but also wildlife populations are really resilient. They can come back quite strong given the right conditions. So
yeah.
I've seen that, and I'm hoping this, and mainly for the elephants in the Okapi.
That they'll rally. Yeah.
They will.
Okay, great. Well, we've been speaking with John Lucas, president of the Okapi Conservation Project. The website for the organization is okapiconservation.org. And John, thank you so much for making the time to join us today on Talking Animals. It was a fascinating conversation. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. It was great to talk about Okapi with someone that likes them.
Yeah, you bet. We love them. All right.
Yeah,
thanks,
great.
John. Okay.
All right. Take
bye-bye
care. Now. Bye-bye.
All right. In just a few minutes, we'll speak with Kelly Sippos, executive director of Saddle Up Riding Club, to hear about the circumstances that threaten the existence of the equestrian therapy program for disabled children and adults, and what they're seeking help for and what they're aiming to do about it. So first, though, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. This is Eddie Izzard with a part of a piece called Talk to the Animals on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
But, you know, whales, they're intelligent. They do whale song. We don't know what it means, but I think that whales are traveling at 78. They're traveling at 78 speed, and if we take them up to 45 speed, we'll find they're actually going, I love you, baby, and if it's quite all right, I love you, baby, well, then I love you, baby, trust in me, Yeah, they're DJs, you see, DJs of the sea. Because sound travels well in water, and they need a big PA to be a DJ, but they've got their whole bodies. Yeah, it works, doesn't it? This next song is going out to all the goldfish down by the Azores. I love you, baby. So they're intelligent, and dolphins, they're intelligent, because we all saw the documentary Flipper. Well, dolphins came up going, what's that? What's that, Flip? Chiang Kai-shek is having trouble. Mao Zedong has taken over mainland China. Chiang Kai-shek has retired to Taiwan with some of his followers, where they will have a complete disregard for international copyright rules. Is that what you're saying, Flip, or do you want fish?
All right. That was Eddie Izzard with part of a piece called Talk to the Animals, taken from his album Circle. All right, here to tell us about sort of a urgent challenge facing the Saddle Up Riding Club, a equestrian therapy program for disabled children and adults, let's welcome Kelly Sippos to Talking Animals. Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. So tell us, just briefly at least, a little bit about Saddle Up Riding Club and what it does.
Well, like you said, we do equine-assisted therapy for children, adults, and veterans. We use the horse as the tool of instrument for the therapy, whether it's just the bonding between an autistic and an Asperger's child, or using it actually to help, you know, build core muscles and strength and balance for somebody with muscular dystrophy or cerebral palsy or an amputee.
Wow. And how long is the club been around? How many years?
We just celebrated our 10th birthday for the club itself, and we've been doing equine therapy for almost 6 years now.
Okay, great. So, and how many folks at any given time, clients, or is the club serving?
Oh, on a Saturday morning, we have about 40 disabled riders that come out, and then anywhere from 20 to 40 volunteers that come out and assist us with the therapy classes.
That's great, and it sounds like both the adults and children are served by the club.
We go from ages 3 to, I think, our oldest rider is 71.
Very cool, and this is all taking place at the moment, at least, in Pinellas Park.
Yes, we've been on the same property there for 6 years until officially this Saturday.
All right, so tell us a little bit about that. What happens this Saturday, and you know, why things may be changing?
Well, as quick as I can here, the owner of the property decided he no longer wanted to lease to us. He offered us a 90 days to come up with the money to purchase the property. He wanted $450,000. The tax appraisal is $233,000 on the property. We started a campaign to try to raise the down payment, as we had the mortgage through a foundation already covered for what the tax assessed amount was. He has now decided not to give us the 90 days. He says he has several offers on the property for $450,000. I'm to go to court on Friday, and after this past week, I've just decided it's not worth the battle anymore. Another man has approached us from Safety Harbor. We have a lot of renovations that are going to be done on the property and to update it to be able to hold the classes that we hold now. But it looks like we will be moving to Safety Harbor.
All right. And so how does that work? That must, like any of these things, must pose some financial challenges, especially if there's a bit of a ticking clock here, right?
Well, exactly. Luckily, the neighbor that's next to us in Pinellas Park, who actually has 4 acres that we use as pasture and for shaded riding, we're moving all of our animals onto her property, so literally right next door on Saturday. We'll be allowed to keep them there while we slowly move all of our equipment and get our handicap ramp and all that done up in Safety Harbor. The hardest thing is I have 10 horses that cost me $725 a week to feed, and we will not be able to do all of our programming over on that property. So our biggest need at the moment right now is helping us to cover the expenses of these animals. And we have goats, miniature horses, turkeys, pigs, chickens, rabbits. I mean, we're like old, you know, like Noah's Ark half the time. And then also then the expense of we'll be applying for a lot of grants and doing fundraisers and looking for donations, hopefully end-of-the-year donations, to be able to update the property in Safety Harbor.
So on the one hand, you're not faced with the huge challenge of trying to buy or just come up with an initial payment on buying a property, but on the other hand, there's still any number of expenses for moving things to the adjacent property and all the other upkeep, the horses, et cetera.
Yes, and horses, I mean, anyone who knows horses, they don't take change as well. You have to do things slowly. And it's the same with the children with Asperger's and autism and Down syndrome. These children, any change in their schedule and in their life can drastically change, you know, anything that, you know, any good that we've been doing. So we're trying to really do, that's why we're doing this slowly and moving them next door, talking this over with the kids, and then doing everything as, you know, in stages so as not to upset the animals, number one, and then, of course, all of our children. We have, probably 75 able-bodied children. They come and take lessons and are in our riding club. So a lot of children affected over this.
Yeah. Just about out of time here, Kelly, but why don't you give us the website for the Saddle Up Riding Club where people could help out one way or another, get involved. If they're able to donate, that's great. If there maybe sounds like you could use just other kinds of help of one kind or another as you make this transition.
Right. We need lots of hands Saturday to help us move.
Yeah.
But the website is all one word, saddleupridingclub.com.
Oh, okay, cool. I don't know why I thought Pinellas Horse, but...
Because the site, the girl who did the website for me, it comes up as Pinellas Horse.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Pinellas Horse, but our actual website, if you just type in saddleupridingclub.org,
okay,
it will come up directly also.
Fair enough. All right, well, we wish you good luck, and obviously you're doing great, great work, and let's hope that the transition to the new place goes pretty smoothly, and people hopefully listening will help out one way or another as part of the holiday season, let's say. So.
Well, thank you. We appreciate you having on, and you have a very Merry Christmas, and the same to all the listeners out there.
All right, thank you. Same to you, Kelly. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, I'm Duncan Strauss. Towards the end of the show, we'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a pair of tickets to see Garrison Keillor appearing January 12th at the Strauss Center. We'll get to that in a few minutes here on Talk Animals. Right now, we're going to hear a vibe-driven animal tune, and I'll be right back in one moment. All right. It's time now for animal news and announcements. First, though, I want to share the aforementioned Dorothy Strauss Christmas message. Now, she didn't write this. In fact, we don't know who did. But the late Dorothy Strauss, my mom, put this up every year as part of the Christmas season sort of decorations in the house. And anyone who cares about animals will likely relate to the strong undercurrent of compassion and other feelings running through the message. So, fair warning, between the poignance of the piece and that it reminds me of my mom, I've never actually gotten through reading it on the air without my voice cracking, or worse. So we'll see what happens. But it's a very cool thing, I think, around this time of the year. So, this Christmas, mend a quarrel, seek out a forgotten friend, dismiss suspicion, and replace it with trust. Write a love letter, share some treasure, give a soft answer, encourage youth, manifest your loyalty in word and deed. Keep a promise, find the time, forgo a grudge, forgive an enemy, listen, apologize if you were wrong, try to understand, flout envy, examine your demands on others, think first of someone else. Appreciate. Be kind. Be gentle. Laugh a little. Laugh a little more. Deserve confidence. Take up arms against malice. Cry complacency. Express your gratitude. Go to church. Welcome a stranger. Gladden the heart of a child. Take pleasure in the beauty and wonder of the earth. Speak your love. Speak it again. Speak it still once again. Hard to do better than that, huh? All right, into the actual animal news and announcements in our remaining time here. Just want to track the ongoing sort of national and semi-local story, by which I'm referring to the planned concert series at SeaWorld and all the acts that have been canceling. So 38 special canceled most recently, I believe, on Monday, unless somebody canceled this morning after I went on the air. So that follows on the heels of Bare Naked Ladies, Willie Nelson, Heart, Cheap Trick, Trisha Yearwood, Martina McBride, and REO Speedwagon. So I think there's still just two standing, Scotty McCreery and Justin Moore. So we'll see what happens with those. But again, all in the wake of Blackfish, the amazing documentary, and people's just awareness of what goes on at SeaWorld, and these acts and others just not wanting to have any part of it or support it even implicitly. Coming up locally, this involves past guests to multiple degrees, I guess, on Talking Animals. Kathy Unruh, who does this great show on WEDU called Up Close, will be hosting James Levesque and Jenny Stein of Tribe of Heart, amazing filmmakers that we've also had on Talking Animals, who will be on with Kathy. Airs tomorrow on WEDU, Thursday, December 19th at 8:30 p.m. And then in the wake of that, they'll be, of course, to be talking about some of their filmmaking and amazing films, and they'll be showing two of them in the following days. Peaceable Kingdom will be airing next Sunday, December 22nd. At 8 p.m. This is on WEDU Plus, by the way, WEDU Plus. And then there another film of theirs, The Witness, will air on Sunday, December 22nd at 9:30 p.m. on WEDU Plus. And this just came in yesterday, courtesy of Sean Canan, our Assistant News and Public Affairs Director here at WMNF. Santa arrives by elephant to visit elementary schools. Elementary students, sorry. So tomorrow, Ringling Brothers and Barnum Bailey will bring an elephant and clowns to Bing Elementary for a holiday visit to remember. Perhaps related to the fact that Ringling's annual engagement opens in Tampa January 1st. I'm thinking it might be related, but I mean, I have to say, as I've said many times begrudgingly on the air and otherwise, they are marketing geniuses, because I'm sure there'll be plenty of front page pictures, lots of footage on the local network news affiliates, etc. And of course, there'll be all kinds of tickets handed out, I'm sure, to these kids and others. So they are crafty. They are crafty. By the way, on a related note, we do every year a show on Talking Animals related to Ringling's local engagement. So January 1st will be no exception. And we'll have Cynthia Moss, one of the world's two or three probably top experts on African elephants. And while circuses typically use Asian elephants, we'll not only find out about her amazing research over 40 years' time with some of the same elephants in this area of Africa, but she can speak to issues of elephants in the wild versus captivity, including, you know, what goes on in circuses. So that'll be 2 weeks from today on Talking Animals. Locally also, before we run out of time here, I just want to tell you that the Humane Society of Pinellas will help Santa deliver pets on Christmas in a whole different non-pachyderm way. So if you adopt a dog or a cat from the Humane Society of Pinellas starting tomorrow, it'll be eligible for a special Christmas delivery, and that could be on Christmas morning or thereabouts. Pet package includes a collar, food dishes, toys, treats, and more. So again, this is a great way to help animals find a home right in this time of the year, and you get a nice bonus array of cool things with it. So go to HumaneSocietyOfPinellas.org to find out more. And I think that might be it, other than to say, you know, I spoke about Beyonce last week and the Jay-Z attempt to go vegan for a few weeks, and how she was showing up everywhere in leather pants and fur coats and stuff. So, but, you know, I don't want to be too cynical, but she was in the news all the time because of that. And, of course, then she, a few days later, dropped her surprise album that nobody knew about. I don't know. May or may not be a connection. I don't know. Maybe that's too cynical. Who knows? All right, so I'm Duncan Strauss, and it's time to play Name That Animal Tune. In addition to functioning as our usual weekly contest, this selection will also serve as a preview of next week's Talking Animals, which is on Christmas morning, and we're doing a very special edition, as the cliche goes, of all Christmas animal songs, which, thanks to Flea's expertise and music collection, is shaping up to be a pretty fun show, I have to say. Meanwhile, this is a giveaway. You do not need to be a WNF member to win, and there'll be a prize. Again, a pair of tickets to see Garrison Keillor appearing January 12th at the Stratus Center. The first person who calls 813-239-9663. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals.
This is Take 17.
1, 2, 3, 4!
All right, we may have to take those off the air if anybody is able to name that animal team, but that's just a taste of what next Wednesday's Christmas edition of Talking Animals, all Christmas animal songs, folks, will be like. So that's next Wednesday, Christmas morning, of course. Actually, let's take a couple of calls. What the heck? Hi, you're on Talking Animals. Can you name an animal tune?
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Well, I know. It's like, hey, who's buried in Grant's tomb? It's a gimme, right? What's your first name?
Barbie? Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool, Barbie. Well, you have won tickets to go see Garrison Keillor on January 12th. I'll come back and get your information. Thanks. Congratulations. Barbie's so excited about this. Anyway, we'll be back next week with the All Animal Christmas edition, and then 2 weeks from today with Cynthia Moss and Hook 2, the Ringling engagement opening that very day. It's WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. Happy holidays to you and yours.